fellas. Let's go. Here we go. Big play. Trips open right. 334 stretch. Z post. X stop. On two. On two. Ready?
This is my dad's show.
It's called the Quarterback Dadcast.
All right, you guys. It's hard to believe it's been 6 months since my guy, Assam, up at Catch Sika Seafoods, got behind the Quarterback Dadcast as our platinum sponsor. Brother, I can't thank you enough, and I can't thank Jeffrey enough for making this thing happen. And so I also want to say that I can't tell you guys the number of amazing stories I've heard from people who continue to order their fish, send me notes, leave messages, continue to just say how much they love, whether it's the salmon, the rockfish, the cod, whatever they're eating, they just love it. And so with the holidays right around the corner, I wanted to invite in a special guest to talk about her love of the salmon for Catch Sika Seafood. So Riley, how much did you used to love fish and how much do you love fish now?
I'm a pizzatarian, meaning I only love to eat pizza, and I'm glad you finally got me to try fish from Assam and team at Catch Sitka Seafoods. I love it, and I can't wait to try the prawns that will be here for Thanksgiving.
Wow, I can't wait to try the prawns either. So you're a pizzatarian? Really? That's what you are?
No, not really. I was just kidding.
Okay. Well, as a reminder, whether you're craving king, coho, like I mentioned, the rockfish, the whitefish, or cod, you guys, Catch Sitka has it. How about their smoked salmon as an appetizer, too? So, Riley, please finish off this little commercial and bring us home.
With COVID's impacts to small business, especially to the tourist interest industry in Alaska, I would be honored if you could support them by visiting catchsitkaseafoods.com and by being a Quarterback Dadcast listener. You will receive 15% off your order by using the code QBDADAK. Thank you for your support of Catch Sitka Seafoods.
Hey everybody, it's Casey Jacobs. We got episode 36 with Craig Kupp, former PLU All-American quarterback and also the father of current NFL wide receiver stud, Cooper Kupp. We're going to hear his story. We're going to hear an amazing story, his passion for faith, his passion for family, his stories of, you know, being a father. He's going to share an amazing story from PLU, his playing football days where he lost his cool a little bit and how the power of communication helped him. And how he stood up to his coach and how they worked through it. I think it's a great story for us dads that we might see ourselves in that situation with our kids one day. So I'm not going to steal his thunder. So sit back, relax, and listen to episode 36 on the Quarterback Dadcast. All right, everybody. Well, thanks again for joining us on episode 36. This is Casey Jacobs, your host, and I'm joined, as I mentioned in my intro, by the former Columbia Football Association stud, Craig Kupp. Most people don't know what the CFA is because it's now defunct, but I can say I was a former member of it. But with that random intro, Mr. Kupp, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Casey. Glad to join you this morning.
Awesome. Well, so I mentioned in my intro, you, the Phoenix Cardinals, not the Arizona Cardinals, but you actually were once a Phoenix Cardinal.
That's correct. Yeah, Phoenix. You got it.
And a Dallas Cowboy, I saw.
Yeah. And a giant.
my buddy, shout out to Kyle Cooper. Cooper here. I'm talking to a giant, so y'all make you feel good about yourself. There's still giant fans out there.
All right. It's been tough the last couple of years.
Big time. So obviously what a great couple years it's been for the Kupp family, with both your kids becoming obviously not Division I athletes, and then having one Cooper going into the NFL. And I think Kettner did too, but Cooper's just what a beast of a receiver he is. And I know you're proud of both kids, but I think it'd be a fun episode today to talk about raising two obviously very athletic kids and learning more about how they got to Division I and how they kept going and what you guys do as parents. But before we dive into all of that, I like to start out every show with finding out what are you most grateful for as a father today?
Oh, well, that's a good question. I've got four kids. So I've got Cooper and Kettner, who you mentioned, and then Kobe and Katrina. And so Kobe and Kettner and Cooper are all out of the house. They're all married. And then Katrina's home with us. But I think the thing I'm probably most happy about, proud about, is that just the people that they are growing into. And they're, the three boys have lovely wives. Coop's got a child, a Cooper Jr. We call him Junie. And cool. So they're starting their families, starting the leave, and they've left and cleaving to their their spouses and to see their families grow and the love that they have in their family. That's been very rewarding for both myself and my wife, Karen.
Awesome. What ages are Kobe and Katrina?
Kobe is, he is 21, if I've got that right. And then Katrina is 18. Katrina's she'll be a senior in high school this year at Davis High School here in Yakima.
Okay. What a interesting time to be a senior right now, huh?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. She's a soccer player. She's committed to Eastern Washington to play soccer, for Eastern. And yeah, it's just tough. This, soccer season's obviously the school season's kind of blown up a little bit. It's all online here in Yakima. And then, the soccer season's been pushed to, I believe, March, April of next year, hopefully tentatively. And so, so we're all kind of, adjusting with everybody else.
No, I hear you, Mitz. So when this episode goes live, everybody, Craig and I are now recording here in the summer. This episode will go live in the fall. And hopefully by the time everybody, when we listen to this, we're going to be talking about how COVID and the pandemic is so much better. People are healthier. We're going to get kids back in school. Sports are going to be playing. Hopefully Cooper's going to be leading the league in receiving. And my fantasy team's going to be killing it. Well, I guess for me, what I'm most grateful for is just the continued time that I get to spend with my kids and my wife during this pandemic. And I think just with anything, there's growth mindset, fixed mindset, and the growth mindset says what an opportunity. The fixed mindset talks about all the negative things that are happening. And I'm such a naive optimist that I'd rather focus on what I have and the opportunities that are out there and how we can do the best what we got. And we're unfortunately tasked with the same challenges right now. But we're just doing our best to get the most out of each day and staying healthy. And that's what I'm most grateful for today.
That's great. Awesome.
Okay. So you talked about your four kids, but maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself and your family.
Sure. So let's see. So I grew up in Sela, Washington, and right outside of Yakima, and went to Sela High School, graduated in 85, went to Pacific Lutheran University and played football at PLU, had the awesome opportunity to play under Frosty Westering, who was my coach, went on and played a little bit of pro football. I was drafted by the Giants, as you mentioned, and was with the Phoenix Cardinals and Cowboys and had a great experience. It was brief. It was just a little over 2 years, 2.5 years, but a great experience for me. And around that time, got married to my wife, Karen. Met Karen at PLU. She was a soccer player and All-American soccer player. She's a much better athlete than I am. So then we started our family so after football, I've been in business, for whatever, 25 years now and various jobs, various, industries have really enjoyed being a dad and being a husband, and a provider for our family and so that's kind of been my journey so far.
Very cool. How are you and your family hanging in there with the pandemic yourself?
You know, we're doing fine. You know, it's adjustments as we talked about earlier, and I appreciate your outlook of looking for the positives and trying to do the same myself. And and much like you just said, time together, and not necessarily time together with our entire family because we're spread out right now with the boys. Coop's obviously down in Los Angeles, and Kettner and Kobe are over in Spokane, starting their lives, so we haven't been able to be together as a complete family. But time with Katrina and my wife, usually our weekends fill up and we're out of we're on the road constantly but it's just been a drastic change for us just to be at home and you know, our yard looks a little better than it's usually looked and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, so just adjusting and thankful for that time though, to kind of be together, with our small little family now.
No, I love it. What, describe, I guess, for our audience, the impacts, your parents had on you and maybe Karen's as well, and how you guys are using what you learned to raise your kids Yeah.
You know, both Karen and I were really lucky. We grew up in families where we knew we were loved, and that's especially, you know, I can speak for me growing up, that just, you know, I knew first and foremost my parents loved me, and that there was a lot of support. I grew up in a household of faith. My faith is very important to my parents. I grew up in that, and subsequently my faith is very important to me as well. There's expectations, you know, of for lack of a better word, cut name or whatever, and any family, you want to represent your family well and don't want to disappoint, and so there's expectations growing up, but that's led with love. I just feel very fortunate to grow up in the family that I grew up in. My father was a football player as well. He played at the University of Washington and played for the New Orleans Saints he had a 12-year career. So he played in a long time. I was in the third grade when he retired. And so that had a big impact on me as well. And that's where I think my love of sports and football in particular was kind of born, was watching what my dad did. And I remember after they played the Rams, I was with somehow my mom was out of town. My friend's family brought me to the game, and the plan was to meet up with my dad after the game. I remember they brought me down, and the locker rooms were outside of Tulane Stadium back in the 70s. And so after the game, they brought me down, and I was able to hold my dad's hand coming off the field and walking to the locker room. And it's just one of those memories that's kind of burned in my heart and in my soul. I just remember walking through there saying, man, I want to do this someday. And so I was very lucky to have the upbringing that I had.
That's awesome. I literally, as you were saying, I could see it. You described it well. I literally saw that story, saw it happen. What you said, it was the biggest impact in third, like just from him playing in that third grade. What was it, you know, what other impacts did that have on you? Just seeing your dad play that at a high level?
Oh, you know, I just there's just something about it. And being in New Orleans, you know how crazy that whole town is about the Saints, and just growing up in that environment, that atmosphere, and where, you know, the Saints are kind of put up on a pedestal, and then you know, and then your dad plays for that. He's part of that, and then, you know, subsequently our family's part of that, it made a huge impact on me, and just being able to go to practices and obviously go to the games and watch him play and watch the Saints play, watch Archie Manning play, that kind of thing. That just, you know, it just, I just absolutely loved it. And I just would get so excited just to be able to watch that, and couldn't wait to get home to get in the backyard and start throwing the ball around, catching around. It just, you know, it was just, again, just huge impact on my life.
That's cool. When you were growing up, did your boys, you said Manning, it made me think about Eli and Peyton. Did you guys interact with them at all?
You know, not really. I didn't meet them until much, much later when my boys started going to the Manning camps, is when I first met those guys. Okay. I remember kind of going over to Danny Abramowitz. He was a receiver for the Saints. Going over to his house, it was kind of some memories like that. But it's mostly just, you know, through what my dad was doing.
Very cool. So let's, I'd love to talk about Frosty and just your days at PLU. You know, when I played at Central, my first ever collegiate action actually was against PLU. I came off the bench in Ellensburg. We got into a shootout. We were down like 28-6 or whatever it was. And we ended up losing 44-41.
Oh.
Super fun game. But I can still remember Frosty and played against a guy named Dak Jordan. Actually, I reconnected with Dak. He's going to be on the show pretty soon.
Oh, cool.
I'm really excited. Yeah, super excited to talk to him. But maybe tell us a story for playing for Frosty that impacted you, and maybe one that has impacted you and how you raise your kids too.
You know, there's Frosty was just a great man and a great coach, but a great man. And he's got lots of sayings, lots of sayings that stick with you. One of the things is you don't care how much someone knows until you know how much they care.
And he
lived that, and he really got to know his players. And, you know, as a quarterback, as you know, you get a little bit of extra time with the coach. And so I just am so fortunate to be able to spend time with him. You know, he got to know me, and I'll kind of walk through this, but he got to know me in a way that he knew I was real hard on myself and that I expected to be perfect. And, you know, as a quarterback, that's impossible. you're not going to be perfect. And the mistakes are going to happen. And so he wanted to limit those, the impact of when I would make a mistake. And so he talked a lot about, he gave me a Bible verse, actually, is Philippians 4:6-7. It talked about not being anxious, but presenting all situations to Christ and allow him to guard my heart, my mind, and to protect me. And so I wear that on my wrist and as a reminder. And when I was playing, Frosty was our head coach, and Scott Westering, his son, was our offensive coordinator. And so I had a whole bunch of time with Scott, and we had an interesting relationship. He was he led a Bible study that I was part of, and I really looked up to Scott as a mentor, and I put him up on a pedestal that was great in some senses, but not good in others. And what I mean by that is that I really struggled with criticism, and as a coach, any coach is going to try and push their players and expand limits and criticism and working through mistakes is just part of the process. But I kind of internalized some of that stuff from Scott. Mm-hmm. And we worked through my senior year. We had a good team, but we had three games left in the year, and we found ourselves 3-2-1. You know, we were falling short of where we were supposed to be. I felt a lot of pressure. I felt responsible for, you know, the poor start that we were in. And I was heaping a lot of stuff, internalizing a lot of that. And I remember we went to we had a practice. Our field was a grass field over in Tacoma, and it would get mudded out, flooded out, you know. And so we'd have to go around, travel to different high schools that had turf. And we were at Stadium Bowl, one night practicing, and I threw a ball. Footwork was bad. I threw a ball into the ground. And Scott got on me, I can't remember what he said to me, but it was like, here we go again. And something just snapped in me, and I just exploded back at Scott. And I said, Scott, you have no right to talk to me that way. Mm-hmm. It started that way, and it went on from there. And I don't remember exactly what I said, but it wasn't good. And I just remember the reaction of Scott and Frosty, that a lot of guys would get thrown out of practice, maybe thrown off the team to do mm-hmm. what I did. And but that didn't happen. Frosty kind of stepped in, kept us going through the practice. We were able to finish the practice, and we would the quarterbacks would always drive out with Frosty in his car so he could talk with us. But I remember after that practice, he said, "Okay, quarterbacks, you all come with me, and Craig, you go with Scott." and so I had that drive home with Scott, and had a real good talk with him. And he shared, he goes, "Craig, you know," and just what I just said, he said, a lot of programs, you might kicked off the team for what you did tonight, but that's not going to happen. He said, I want to understand, you know, where did that come from? What's going on? Tell me about what's going on. And I was able to share with him how I looked up to him and how his criticism was, his corrections, criticism, whatever you want to call it, how I was internalizing that. And we were able to talk through all of those issues. And he said, Craig, we got three games left, three regular season games left. He said, "You got my word." He said, I'm going to change the way that we work together, and I'm going to support you, and you're not going to hear that from me the rest of the way." And that, it was just like this huge burden was just lifted off of me. Mm-hmm. And last three games of the year, we set records and offensive records and all kinds of, it was one of those things that I look back in my life where they cared about me enough to, instead of just tossing me aside, they really looked into, they cared about me. They wanted to know what was going on, work through a, you know, kind of an ugly situation, and really good things came out of it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I'm sure you've shared that with all your kids.
Yeah. Yeah. They're aware of it.
Very cool.
You, as a dad, it's just a great lesson for us, because we see a behavior that we just know is wrong, just makes us mad. Why are you doing that? I don't understand that. But, you know, to take a step back and try and dive into that, what's behind that? What's causing that in our kids? And mm-hmm. And I'm just so thankful that my coaches had the patience with me to work through something like that.
Yeah, curiosity is a great skill set. I'm sure you use that in your business career as well as a sales perspective. It's like you never can ask enough questions, and not just the surface level questions, but that next, you know, second, third, fourth level question to get to the truth of what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, speaking of coaches, in my intro, I mentioned the mighty Bo Baldwin, who was my coach at Central Washington, and obviously coached Coop and Kettner at Eastern. It's funny that story, as you were saying that story, it reminded me of my senior year. We're playing Humboldt State, and if we win, we are league champs, and we kind of stumbled a little bit my senior year as well. And then we got really hot at the end. And I remember Baldwin and I, there's actually, ironically, a guy at Yakima. Do you know the name Brett Rogers?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So B Rog was a receiver of mine, and Brett didn't play a ton, but he was one of the hardest working guys I've ever been around. He always was, I could always count on him to throw in the off season. And he wasn't always going to get the reps, but he would always gave me time. And I respect that guy of the world. And so we're up, and Brett gets some minutes at the end of this game. And I still remember play his doubles right 75X, and he was his little corner out from a slot, and then the X on the wide runs a little like flat to kind of pull the corner in. And I was like, in my mind, I was not going through my reads. I was going to force it because I wanted to get B Raj a chance. And we were up by like 15 or something. So the game was fine, and I forced it, and Baldwin got into me, and I got right back at him, and we're arguing. And then Coach, do you know John Pica, Coach Pica?
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. So Peak was in like, what is wrong? And he got into both of us and pretty much told us to stop acting like idiots, and then we both kind of laughed through it. But I know that feeling as, you know, competitor. I did not act the right way. I didn't play the right as a quarterback. I didn't act the right way on the sideline, but in my heart, I felt I was in the right spot. I was doing it for my boy B Raj. anyway, so I could relate to that story. Think about, so was So all your kids played sports, and I take it?
Yeah, they did. They you know, for Coop and Kettner and Katrina, their sports were really, really important to them. And they, you know, they loved it and really worked at them. And, you know, Kobe was different. Kobe was, you know, sports were fine. They were good. He played football through his sophomore year and then played golf and played some baseball. And, but it was more kind of a fun thing for him, not something really to pursue. And so there, we had both dynamics going on in our family.
How was it? Was that, and you know, as for you and your wife being competitive, athletes, and then you have all three Division I athletes, and I see parents at all different levels. Like we, sometimes they live vicariously through their kids, and, it's a struggle sometimes to remember that it's their journey, not ours. So was that, you know, challenging for you guys as you went through just letting Kobe just do what he wanted to do?
Yeah, you know, it's challenging in a way, but at the other point, Karen and I took the position that we wanted our kids to find their passion, whatever that was, you know, whatever lit their fire, you know, and then we wanted them to go after it 100% and to support them in that. And you know, and luckily, Coop, Kettner, and Katrina, they kind of all found what they kind of really wanted to go after fairly young. And so it was a little bit more difficult with Kobe of just, you know, trying to find what is that thing, you know, what is that passion? What is that, not activity, but what is that pursuit that is going to really charge you up and that you can get after? And so, yeah, it was difficult. And I don't know if we ever really super figured that out with Kobe. You know, we tried to expose him to lots of different things but he was just kind of that kid where he was fine doing whatever he was doing at the time, you know? he did eventually, he's a computer science, he's going through the computer science program at Eastern,
Very cool.
And so he eventually found his way, but it was a much longer process with Kobe than it was with the other kids.
And I would say that's probably more normal than the three of your Division I kids who found it early. I think it's more normal. It seems like today that like kids who, and that's why I loved in the very beginning about what you're grateful for. You said you're just happy about the people who they become. And, I think I've talked about that multiple times on this show as I interview people and it's such a good reminder that we have to realize, and I give huge props to my friend Bert Nachtigall out on the East Coast, where I just saw him last week, where we talk about what is, like Stephen Covey talks about, what is your, you know, begin with the end in mind. What is your outcome? What is what you want? And in the end, that's what I want. I want a great dad, a great husband, a great father, a good friend, a good business leader, a good someone in the community, someone who volunteers, whether they are an all-league basketball player or a good golfer. Yeah, that'd be awesome, but great, mm-hmm. but that's not going to define them.
Yeah.
And I think those are such, I think, important things. And for me to hear from you, you know, I got kids that are, you know, going first year of high school, which I still can't believe, and, you know, middle school. And it's just one of those things I want to kind of continue to remind myself. And I hope that dads who are listening today, remind yourself too that, it's up to us to find them, help them find a passion, and then support them. Don't force your passions on them.
Oh gosh, Casey, you're so right. I see it where it's the parents' dream, not necessarily a kid's dream, and that just never ends well. Mm-hmm. And in the long term, you look at the long term thing. I mean, sports are fantastic. They're great. We are so lucky that Coop's getting a, you know, kind of an extended sports career, you know, with the pros, but that's a finite time. That's a limited time. But you're going to be a person, a mm-hmm. businessman, a husband, a brother, you know, that's for the rest of your life. And if you can't do those things well, you know, you're, you're just not setting yourself up very good. And so that, you know, if as a parent, if you're going to focus on one thing, you better start with that first. that's my thoughts anyway.
So true. So as you think back to your kids, like when did you realize, man, these guys got a chance to play in the league? Like what did you do as a parent? Were you guys one of those parents that like spent tons of money on training, or was it your kids driving the training? I mean, how did, maybe walk us through what that looked like?
You know, I guess, you know, kind of like what I was saying is, you know, Karen and I, we wanted them to find that passion. They found it. I'll use Cooper and Kettner originally, I guess, is the example. I'll just use Cooper. So Cooper, I think it was probably around, seventh, eighth grade. He was undersized. He was always undersized, but he had good ability and with the football skills. He was actually a running back at that time. But you could tell there was an inner confidence about him, and it was really a fun process to go through with him, because he matured late, so he was way behind the other kids, especially seventh, eighth, ninth grade. Mm-hmm. But you could tell that he had that inner confidence. He always felt like that he was the best player on the field, whether it was reality or not. That was his mindset, and that's what he believed in his heart. I don't know how many talks we had with him, that he would be frustrated, you know, because physically it was hard for him physically. And I just kept telling him, you know, keep working on your fundamentals, keep perfecting your fundamentals, because you're going to get your body's going to come. And when your body comes, you're going to leapfrog. you're going to be so much ahead of others just because of the work that you've put in, as your body's maturing. And, mm-hmm. and it was really fun to see kind of that, those words kind of coming into reality as he got older and, you know, started maturing into high school and then hit college. Cause it really came true. You know, Kettner was a little different. You know, every kid's different. Kettner kind of struggled with confidence. And in fact, I remember going to his first game. This is grid kids, you know, his very first grid kid game. Fourth grade. But where I remember pulling out of the driveway and I looked in the rearview mirror and Kettner's just got this look of fear and death in his eyes. And I say, Kat, how you doing? He goes, oh, I'm a little nervous. So I'm just trying to lighten it up. I go, Kattner, what's the worst possible thing that could happen today out on the football field? And he goes, I guess I could get hit really hard in the head and it could knock me out. And it's, Dad, I could die out there.
Oh, that's great.
I didn't really know where to go with that one, but
let's hope that doesn't happen, son.
Yeah. That's right. But anyway, so that's where kind of he kind of struggled. We had to kind of work through his inner confidence but you know, fortunately he matured a little bit sooner, a little quicker than his body did, matured a little quicker than Coop, and he was able to, have the success that he had. So,
well, that's it's funny how you see. I mean, Coop now is just he looks like Drago from Rocky IV, just this specimen, you know. And but like, you know, and that's so true though. Like, but what great advice for parents at home? Like the fundamentals. Like I would always tell people, and now I was a leadership coach, I talk about the two things we have control over is attitude and effort. And that's kind of what you were talking about with Coop. It's like, focus on your craft, the things you have control over, and have a positive attitude about it. And then when your body grows, it's God's hands, not your hands. Mm-hmm. Let it go. And then once you start getting stronger, then get in the weight room and make it stronger and stronger and stronger. And, but it's, yeah, that's, I love that. That was good.
Yeah. You know, and as you're talking, Casey, another little story that I just think about with Coop, he was in sixth grade and he played basketball with various teams and he was always a pretty good basketball player. And he got asked to play on this kind of advanced team, his sixth grade year. And there were some of his buddies, that he played football with. They had a basketball team and so he went and played with them, and it was obvious right off the bat that these guys were playing at a different level than he was used to. And that first game, he was out there, you know, where a player is he's out on the court, but he's just trying to get out of the way. He's not really playing. He's not participating. He's not giving it his all. He's not entering into the game, but he's just kind of out there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
he was doing that. And I remember having a ride to the drive home with him. And to ask him about how it went, and he said, "Oh, it went good." And I go, "Did it really go good?" And we just had that talk about being out there and the mental approach that mental approach that he had for that game was not going to work. And if he was going to stick with that, if that was enough and that was good enough, that we were going to go back to those other teams that he was playing with. And, mm-hmm. And so I think as a parent, and I knew, and you got to kind of be careful. You got to lead with love.
Right.
And that's so important that you lead with love as a dad, and you want the very best for your son and your daughter. But when you know, I don't know, as a dad, you know, I saw kind of what was going on there. Was able to have a long talk. Cooper probably hated it. It was a 30-minute drive home. Mm-hmm. And that's all we talked about. And I didn't do that a lot, but I did that one time just to try and snap him out of that mentality that he had and to get more of a winning mentality. And he points back to that conversation of you've got to have your mind right, you know, for athletics. And, you know, we're talking about raising kids that want to succeed and want to, you know, play Division I sports and beyond. You know, I think there's going to be times where we see things in our kids and we know them, and you need to call them out and raise their expectations for themselves. But again, I just can't stress enough that it has to be led with love, and, mm-hmm. and they need to know from without a shadow of a doubt that you love them and you want the very best for them. And I think if you can set that foundation, and you know that opens up the door to be able to have a difficult conversation like that, to raise their expectation and raise their awareness of a situation. And so anyway, I don't know why that just came to mind.
No,
we were talking, but
It's fine. I'm glad you said it, because it spawned. I had a similar time when my son was in probably the fourth grade, and there'd be some games where a lot of it's for boys. I think they're just emotionally, they don't advance as well as girls. I feel like girls are just a lot more coachable and younger than boys. At least my world so far I've seen. But it's kind of like some games I'm like, wow, this guy's like an animal out there. And then there's times where it's just his effort wasn't, you know, and I've had to challenge myself not to get like mad or frustrated, but I'm like, dude, this is what's going on. And I find one, and I don't know if it was, you know, as a dad, cause sometimes what's the word I'm looking for? You almost like, you want to be proud of your kids, and I'm always gonna be proud of them. But that day I found myself almost, it's kind of embarrassing to say, I was like, Dad, buddy, what are you doing? And I try not to be the car ride home guy too, because I think sometimes they're not in a spot when they're ready to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's easy for the parent to talk about it. It's kind of like if you have a bad day at work, you don't want to ride home and have Coop, you know, judging your typing speed skills and your, hey, you really screwed up that sales call, but dad. You know, but when we got home, we ended up talking, and I remember like kind of challenged the kids. Like I made both kids play one-on-one, not a proud moment, but we did. And then I went for a run. I said, get on your bikes. You're following me. And we, then afterwards we talked, I said, listen, you're not in trouble by it, but I think you don't want to be a person in life that looks back in a year and says, man, I didn't put in the effort. And that's super frustrating. And we've used even COVID as, do you want to be someone when this pandemic's over that you said, man, I didn't make the high school team, or I didn't get the job, or I'm not successful because of, you know, COVID. Or do you want to be that person that says, man, I use COVID to get ahead of everybody. I worked harder. I did push-ups, sit-ups, squats. I got in the weight room. I did all these things. I was at the driving range for 2 hours. I mean, if these are your goals, it's my job to help remind you what's responsible to get there. If your goals have changed, that's okay. I don't need you to be a high school basketball player if you want to be a Microsoft developer, great. Let's find a computer science class to get into. But being average is not okay. And being having a not good effort person is not okay in our house. And some people that might be a little intense, but I don't know.
No,
you made me think of that.
Oh, I should. And Casey, I agree with you. Why settle, you know? Why? It's not like every part of our life, it has to be super intense and super, you know, but those things that you're working towards, those things that you set as important, and you talk about goals, those goals that you set to get to a place. I mean, that all that is so important. And so it's as a dad, you know, I think it is our job, just like you're saying, to help them in that and to stay accountable to what they are, what they want for their lives, what outcome they want for their lives. And so, it's our job to help them get there. I'm thinking of my daughter too. I have similar conversations with her soccer and her deal is, she would have a tendency to kind of fall into that, have lapses in a game of instead of pushing and having a winning mentality. I'm going to win the ball. I'm going to go after the ball. I'm going to win the ball every time, where she would skip back on her heels and just to be able to talk through those kinds of things and, you know, what's going through your mindset, what triggered in the game to get you in that mindset to get on your heels rather than on your toes and moving forward. And I just think things like that, you know, as a parent, again, trying to understand the why and help them through it. Things like that, can really help your child. And Katrina, you know, would go back and she would, excuse me, watch some film of it, and she would just get frustrated with herself. Go, oh, Dad, I see what you're saying. What am I doing here? So anyway, that's little things like that are important.
But what a cool thing that she could see it and own it, and you know, that's part of it being, I think, coachable. Like you mentioned your story in the beginning about, you know, being too hard on yourself, and I think one thing I talk about a lot. And I've learned is I want kids. I want the people I coach in business. Listen, mistakes are going to happen. They're going to happen, and no one's going to be perfect. And it's okay to say, I don't know. It's okay. It's just not okay not to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Right. And, just the sooner that we admit that and then learn to get better versus making excuses and teaching our kids, like, you know, we talk about that a lot in our house too, is blame yourself before you blame anybody else. I don't care what the outcome is. Figure out what you could have done differently before you're going to talk about anybody else's issues.
Yep. Accountability is huge.
So, you know, as the theme, when we started this podcast, you know, back in, you know, almost January, which is hard to believe, you know, it's been this long, it's been super fun. The goal was, you know, the quarterback of the household, quarterback dadcast, to think about, you know, and not to stereotype, because moms can be quarterbacks too. And some of the moms are probably way better quarterbacks than we are. But the goal is we really want to, the goal of these conversations is I want to help dads improve their leadership skills. And I think with that, it requires us to admit what we don't always do well and maybe some areas we need to get better at. And one I've talked openly and continue to talk about is patience. And one thing I'm always trying to do is just be aware when I feel those moments where I feel like my patience is losing, how do I stop it? And then if I do lose my patience, how do I own it? And if I have to apologize to my wife or my kids or myself or with anybody. So I guess with that said, you know, for you, how are you working hard to continue to be the quarterback and now maybe the grandpa quarterback of your household to make sure you're leading through the ups and downs?
Yeah. Gosh, that's a good question. I try and live my life with authenticity. By what I mean by that is the words that I speak, you'll see that in my actions. And my actions, I want my actions to speak louder than my words. So that's important to me. And hopefully, and you'd have to talk to my kids. Hopefully, I've modeled an example of a father that lives that way, and something that they can hopefully was attractive to them, and hopefully that they'll want to implement in their lives. And the reason the reason that's important to me is because I saw it in my dad, and I had I've got a great dad that has patterned a life of living authentically and loving first and wanting the best for me. So I'm just so lucky to have that in my life, to have that pattern for me. And then that's why it's so important for me to do that for my kids. So I guess that's the first thing. I'm trying to think through times where I've gotten knocked to my knees, you know, where it's hard to lead when you're on your knees. I'm thinking of a time and this goes back a little ways. It goes back, 2008, I lost my brother. He died from brain cancer. He fought it for 5 years and passed away in 2008 finally. And working through that was really tough for me. I mentioned that my faith is very important to me and man, I really wrestled with my faith with a lot of discussions with a lot of prayer and questions to God, but you know, why'd this happen? Stories of healing other folks and why not my brother? And so it really just knocked me on my knees and through that, the working through that of releasing that bitterness that I was feeling inside. That was in my faith and coming to the point where, to the realization and admitting that I can't see everything on this world that's going on. And I may never know why that had to happen to my brother, but, I've got to let it go and I've got to let this go. And I've got to be able to move on and not that I'm not going to miss him and love him forever, I've got to admit that. And I've got to admit that with my faith, with God, that there's probably something going on that I can't even see, that maybe there's purpose in why that had to happen. And again, that sounds kind of weird and sounds like that it might not, it's kind of weird thinking, but it's where I had to get to move beyond that, to get off my knees and to be able to be the man that God created me to be and to be able to lead my family. So I was just trying to think through a time where it was really rough, and it's hard to lead your family when you're rocked like that. But that was kind of an example of trying to work through a situation that, uh, where I got to get back on my feet and lead.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you were saying that, a couple things came to mind. One, I think it requires us to be vulnerable enough to talk about our feelings and emotions. Or I think sometimes, dads, maybe when your dad was growing up, I think not every dad probably was the emotional, talk about their feelings, say, I love you a lot, give your kid a hug in front of people, where I think that's, I think the fact that you probably hit those emotions head on, talk about it, what an experience to talk to your kids about. Unfortunately, death is going to happen to all of us. We can't not prevent that from happening. I don't know. It resonated when you said that. So I think it's, I think that was the positive for me out of that story you shared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess as we get ready to wrap here, what would you say if I had asked you 2 to 3, actionable tasks, fathers who are listening right now can learn from your journey, to improve their leadership at home and become that ultimate quarterback of their household, what would you tell them?
And we kind of already talked about a lot of these things, but the three things that I kind of would boil it down to is, I keep saying lead with love, and I just can't stress that enough of mm-hmm. how we just, with our kids, we have to lead with love. They have to know that we love them. We need to be able to find ways that we express that to them. And so that would be the number one thing. Second is be consistent with your life, be consistent with your words, and be consistent with your actions. I use that term live authentically, because our kids watch us. I listened to your podcast with Romar and he talked about how, players watch their coaches. They watch their every moves and, they're able to, emulate them repeat their actions. With a coach and a player, just multiply that by 10, 20, 100, a father, son, or a daughter, daughter, father, situation. 'Cause they watch what we do and they listen to our words. They watch how we interact with our wives and for me, I just think it's so important that I set an example and that I lead with genuine love. And if for some reason with me and Karen, if something's sideways, we need to address that. We need to address it. We need to take care of it. We need to get things back on track so that number one, that we can be in a real authentic love relationship. And then and model that for our kids, and I guess that I hope that's enough.
No, I love it, man. That's
but
great.
But that's that would be my advice. And again, shoot, Casey, I'm talking like I'm this perfect guy, and I've made so many mistakes and worked through so many mistakes, and we're going to make mistakes, but the big thing Frosty always talked about, flushing our mistakes, learning from our mistakes, correcting our mistakes, and then flushing them so that they don't tear us down and we don't get embroiled in the mistake themselves, but that we're able to bounce back and be a better person.
No, it's so true. And I think the best advice we all get in life is the simple stuff we already know. We just need to hear it. And you need to hear it again and often. And like you talk about leading with love, it's such a good reminder for everybody listening at home it doesn't cost you anything to wake up every day and go give your kids a hug and tell them you love them and you're proud of them and start their day with positivity. And I think just some little act of kindness and love that way, watch what it will do to a kid's confidence each and every day. Even if they don't want to do it, give them a hug anyways,
They'll appreciate it when they're older. They'll appreciate it for sure.
100%, 100% they will. As we wrap, how can people? I'm not sure if you're on social media, if you're on LinkedIn. Is there a way that if people wanted to connect with you and through social? Is there a way we can send them? They want to learn about what you're doing in the business world.
Yeah. So, let's see. I'm on Twitter. So Twitter might be a good way. It's Craig Cupp at, what is it? I'll find you.
Yeah, I'll find you and tag it.
And then, Facebook, whatever, you know.
Cool. Before I forget, do you remember the name Mark Dahl at Acela?
Mark Dahl. I do. The name sounds familiar, but I'm having trouble placing it.
So Dahl, he's my age. So I'm 40, almost 45. He was a 4-year starter lineman at Central, and one of the best linemen ever played for us. And he was my roommate my senior year, but he was out of Acela High School too.
Oh, okay.
94.
All right.
So yeah, he's a funny dude. Great guy. But anyway, man, this has been awesome. I really appreciate your time, Craig. And I've learned a ton about you and your family. And I got a page full of notes here that I'm going to be thinking about the rest of the day. I guess, but with that, everybody, I want to continue to thank Catch Sika Seafoods for their support. And I also want to thank everybody for your following of this podcast. And the biggest gift you can give us at home is just to leave a review on wherever you consume your podcast, whether it be iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. We are on all the major shows. And I think, for those that don't know much about podcasts, show them how to just share an episode. It's the best way that people can continue to learn about this content. But with that, Craig, this episode 36 is in the books, man. Thanks again for your time.
Oh, thank you, Casey. Pleasure.